You're listening to Women from the United Nations in New York. I'm Julie Walker. Women in Libya have been suffering at the hands of men as fighting in the North African country continues, according to Margot Wallstrom, the UN's special representative on sexual violence in conflict. It's the latest in a long list of examples of sexual abuse endured by women in conflict situations around the world. Jerry Adams reports.
In times of war and unrest, it's often women who suffer most. In Libya, after 2 months of fighting between forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi and pro-democracy rebels, reports are coming out of sexual abuse. Margot Wallstrom is a special representative on sexual violence in conflict at the United Nations. She's been briefing the UN Security Council.
Sexual violence has emerged, despite the robust action of the international community to protect civilians in Libya. Although reports of rape remain unconfirmed and even brutally silenced, they have arrested the attention of the world.
Television pictures of a Libyan woman, Eman Al-Obeidi, who claimed she had been raped by Muammar Gaddafi's soldier, have been broadcast around the world. She burst into a hotel in Tripoli to tell foreign journalists about her experiences. Her claims were denied by the Libyan authorities. Margot Wallstrom says there are probably other unreported incidents.
The name of Eman Al-Obeidi is known to all. Reports from transit camps on the Libya-Tunisia border, from surgeons, doctors, and international media representatives suggest that it is not plausible to consider her case an isolated accident or incident.
The issue of women being raped or abused during conflict is not new to the United Nations. The UN, other international organizations, and governments have been targeting rapists in war-torn Democratic Republic of the Congo for some time. And, according to Margot Wallstrom, there have been successes.
The past several months have also shown that where there is a political will, there is a way. The government of the DRC ensured a swift and open investigation into the rapes that occurred in the Fizi territory in December last year. This led to the trials and convictions by the military court in Baraka of Lieutenant Colonel Mutware Kibibi and 10 other officers of FARDC. These perpetrators will serve sentences of between 10 and 20 years.
The prohibition of all forms of sexual violence is enshrined in Security Council Resolution 1960, which was enacted in 2010. Margot Wallstrom says the resolution has provided women in conflict situations with hopes that the crimes against them will not go unpunished.
Sexual violence maims the survivor not only physically, but psychologically and socially, turning victims into outcasts. And yet, this war requires no weapon greater than an individual's cruel intent. As one Indian peacekeeper so aptly stated last week, a rape is an irreversible violation. We cannot reverse the irreversible, but we can reinforce efforts to prevent and prosecute. In that respect, Resolution 1960 is seen by many women as a message of hope.
Jerry Adams, United Nations.
Even before the unrest which swept through North Africa and the Middle East, the International Monetary Fund was warning that several countries, including Tunisia, needed to undertake major reforms to address joblessness. The unemployment rate there is estimated at over 13%, but it's thought to be much higher among the young. As the IMF's Jacob Fenston finds out from 22-year-old Tunisian writer and activist Samar Samir Mezgani, the situation is even worse for women.
I'm very worried about what are the opportunities available for me as a young person and as a young Arab woman as well in my country, even after the revolution. I think that is not exactly the lack of opportunities that is the main problem of unemployment in our countries, but also there is a lot of corruption involved and a lot of exclusion of some categories in the country of young people who do not have access to information, who do not have access to a better education. But I think it's also something that mostly Arab young women are facing more than men, because not only we have this challenge of unemployment, but also we have the challenge of being unwelcome in some positions and some professions, especially on the political side of the country and the political environment of it, and also on the economic one as well.
You just spoke about why it affects young women in particular. Why does it affect young people especially?
I think one of the major reasons for that is that young people in our region are still looked down at. They are not involved in the decision-making process. And even when we talk about it and then when we bring them to talk, we bring them as audience more than as speakers. We bring them as consumers more than producers. We bring them as people who do not have experience and do not have knowledge. Although they might actually have much better experience and knowledge than some of the old people, at least what the revolution showed us, that they do have much better political awareness and will and wish for democracy. And they also have much better technological experience in terms of dealing with the new technologies and social media. So I believe it's much more about this culture that we have that excludes young people and look at them as passive. But if you give them chances, this can actually change the situation.
What do you see as some of the causes behind this unemployment and underemployment?
The main cause of it probably is the fact that most young people nowadays are educated. They graduate from universities. They have had the education and the curricula to be able and expecting to work. But the capacity of the job market is not meeting these expectations. And I do believe that this is not really our responsibility as much as it is the responsibilities of the old regimes that did not create policies of a long-term vision that would tackle this issue and enhance youth employability.
And you mentioned including young people more in decision making, but what else do you think can be done to address these problems in the short term as well as the long term?
The revolution showed us that young people are sick of demanding rights and they're taking them by themselves. We see young people providing their own work opportunities, but also providing job opportunities for other young people. These young people should be encouraged and supported.
That was Samar Samir Mizgani speaking with Jacob Fenston during the IMF World Bank spring meetings in Washington, D.C. At least 2.6 million stillbirths occur each year, according to the World Health Organization, which is urging governments around the globe to recognize it as a major health issue. And it's not just happening in underdeveloped countries. Radmila Suleimanova reports.
Every day, more than 7,200 babies are stillborn. In 2009 alone, that amounted to 2.6 million. Most of them died during or just after delivery. Many stillbirths go unreported, according to a new study by the Lancet Medical Journal published in collaboration with the World Health Organization. The study says the highest numbers of stillbirths are found in sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. Dr. Frederik Froen from the Norwegian Institute of Public Health is one of the study's authors.
The vast majority of stillbirths, 80%, are never given a name. They are never held or dressed by the mother. They don't have a funeral. They are disposed of in the simplest possible way. That invisibility at the personal level is also seen for the mothers. A large proportion of them are marginalized. There is significant stigma associated to having a stillbirth. One out of four stillbirths around the globe are thought by community to be caused by the mother's own sins, by witchcraft and evil spirits.
Stillbirth is directly related to the lack of skilled medical care for mothers and babies during childbirth. And nearly two-thirds of all global stillbirths occur in 10 countries: India, Pakistan, Nigeria, China, Bangladesh, DR Congo, Ethiopia, Indonesia, Afghanistan, and Tanzania. The highest rates are found in Nigeria, with 42 stillborn per 1,000 births, and in Pakistan, with 47 stillborn per 1,000 births. Dr. Flavia Bustiero is WHO's Assistant Director General for Family and Community Health.
What is important with this launch today is really to bring attention to these high numbers of stillbirth worldwide and to take advantage of the current interest and focus by the international community, and I'm thinking in particular of the UN Secretary General's Strategy for Women's and Children's Health, which has raised a lot of interest, which has mobilized a lot of resources, and it's a very opportune time to bring to the world community attention.
Dr. Froen from the Norwegian Institute of Public Health says it's important to set targets.
The goals have been set for every high-burden country to reduce their stillbirth rates by 50%. And for all high-income countries with less than 5 per thousand stillbirths, the goal has been set to eliminate social inequities and avoidable stillbirths.
While most stillbirths occur in the developing world, in high-income countries, obesity, late maternal age, and smoking during pregnancy do contribute to an increased risk of babies dying at birth. Radmila Sulimanova, United Nations.
You've been listening to Women from the United Nations in New York. I'm Julie Walker.